at the one hand, sort of more diligent and cautious, and off the other hand, sort of there will be a lot of opportunities because of that sentiment, and there will be really good operators that will have access to those opportunities. And at the end of the day, when you invest with these operators like you guys, it's a long-term game.
Let's get ready to scale. Hey guys, thanks for joining us for yet another episode. Today, I'm excited to bring to you Litan Yahav. Litan is joining us from Israel, and he is actually the CEO and co-founder of Visor, which is a startup company for investment tracking for passive investors. Prior to that, he was CEO and co-founder of Sagoma, which was acquired by R2Net back in 2018. And before that, he actually served as a naval officer with the Israel Defense Force and then took those skills after his time in service and was a scaling and skipper instructor for about 4.5 years also. On top of all of that, Litan also has a law degree from Reichman University. And I'm very excited to have you here with us today, Litan. Thank you.
Wow, that was an awesome intro. And I love the slides at the beginning. That was really cool. Good job on that. I'm happy to be here.
Well, thank you. Thank you. We try our best.
And we sold our last company in 2015.
Oh, sorry about that. All right. 2015. Yeah, we'll be sure to get that
updated. We stayed on until 2018, scaled it. And then at that point, me and my co-founder moved on. But we can talk about that.
Yeah, actually, that leads me exactly to where I want to go. So I think it's incredible that you've been part of a successful startup company already. Now you have a second one. So, you know, if you don't mind sharing with your listeners, what is your experience with real estate investing and how did you come around to the idea of I need to start Visor?
So there was not an idea to start. I mean, Visor did not start as sort of let's build a business. It was sort of we have a problem and we need to solve it. And in order to sort of understand that problem, I'll dive a little back to Sagoma, the previous company, right? We saw that in 2015, and me and my co-founder at that point sort of encountered our first amount of money and sort of, all right, what do we do now? And just started to speak with friends of ours and friends of friends of ours. And the cool thing in Israel is that every second person here invests in real estate abroad passively. And so that created a situation where there are a lot of capital raisers, GPs, operators that do real estate in the US and in Europe and raise money from Israeli investors like us and that we know personally and we can trust. And so we just started to do that. And at the same point, also invested in some single family homes in the US, just, you know, because we wanted to generate some passive income. But then while doing that, sort of we found out, well, rental properties, single family homes are sort of not really passive, right? They're really active. And then we saw these multifamily LP investments as syndications were like so passive, generating better returns. And we're like, why would we want to do the active stuff? Let's just do all only passive. And over the past 8 years, that's what we've been doing in real estate and private equity in the US and in Europe. With the biggest hurdle being finding people we can trust to invest with, right? That was the biggest challenge. Anyway, so that sort of brought us to, and because sort of we're so aggressively looking for passiveness, at some point, like 3 or something years ago, it was like, all right, I get an email from a GP that I invested with. I didn't even remember how much I invested and what my expectations were. And these are good problems to have, but I was getting more and more of these. And so was my co-founder, and we get money in and out of our bank accounts and it just became a mess. And our spreadsheets became just too insane. And so we built ourselves a piece of software to automate all of that for us, which ended up being something that a lot of our friends wanted as well. And then we started to research the world, and there were a lot of people like us and decided to build a new startup, and that's Visor. That's sort of a quick rundown of that.
Yeah, very cool. So I'm sure that many of the listeners can appreciate everything you're saying right now. Especially when you're an investor and you're invested with multiple sponsors and you're trying to keep up with all the communications, remember and track all the performance of all of the investments. You're right. It can very quickly switch from being something that's passive to actually very active. So I think it's great that, you know, out of this challenge, you know, you decided to create a solution. Now you make it sound so easy, like, oh, we just decided to, you know, create this platform in order to manage, you know, our investments. So for our listeners that are into actually technology and startup companies, do you want to just kind of walk us through the process of how you kind of really started to grow out the platform and really, you know, basically everything from the UX design to being able to actually attract customers and just kind of share a little bit about that startup journey?
Yeah, so it started really organically. We just hired an engineer and said, "All right, these are all problems." And like, I actually sketched out, you know, PowerPoint, like, this is how I want the buttons to look and how I want the flow to operate. We hired an engineer that we paid for to build it for us. And then when we turned that into Visor and built an actual startup and raised funding for that. That was after researching a lot of the world, mainly in the US, speaking with a lot of people like us, just to sort of reconfirm that we're not the only ones suffering from this and there are people like us. And then while talking with them and understanding what their issues were, that helped us sort of identify what we need to turn what we built for ourselves into to bring value for people like us. Because the biggest problem with building any type of software business that I'm aware of is focusing on what needs to be done now, because the product is never going to be perfect, right? You have to compromise because you need to bring something to the market and you need to test it with people to make sure that what you're building is what they need or what they actually want and use. Because what they say doesn't always mean what they do, right? And so that was sort of the initial process. And then after we sort of clarified that there are people like that, that they will use something like this, we raised an initial funding round and raised some sort of angel investor money here in Israel from some amazing angel investors, and built our initial version of the product into something more. You know, we hired from day one really good engineers and designers in-house to make sure we built an amazing experience, which is also super secure and private, because those are two aspects that were really important for us. And then when we felt that that was good enough, even though we knew that it wasn't perfect, we started to onboard beta users into the platform and get their feedback and what needs to change. And we did that for almost a year, even more, like a year and a half of just like beta testing this and adding more functionality and removing stuff and security and just all this stuff until we actually went out and launched this to the general public, which was like five, six months ago.
Yeah, so it's definitely, you know, truly in startup mode. And I'm curious to know, as you've had the opportunity to work closely with your beta testers, which are all obviously investors, what have been some additional benefits that you've discovered along the way of, you know, creating this platform for investors and maybe even any insights that's helped you gain into your own investment strategies?
Yeah, so we have a few aspects that we didn't know would be really imperative to our customers. One of them is this feature that we call the magic box, which is essentially this module within the platform where you can just drag and drop files or even forward emails to, and then all your investment documents, your updates, your statements, your K1s, everything just flows, spreadsheets, everything just flows into that magic box and then is translated into an asset, data, updating existing assets, creating that sort of like family office approach or concierge approach, which this was like one of the later features we did towards launching the platform publicly, because we weren't sure if people would like use that or not, but it became like a hit and everyone just uses our magic box nonstop, which is an amazing thing to see that we didn't think about that from day one. And there were some more aspects down the road, like cash flow projection and, you know, we automatically now detect transactions in our members' bank accounts and link those transactions to assets so that if I get a distribution from an investment, we'll automatically identify that and link it so that the performance is updated automatically. But I think the coolest feature, and this isn't something that we found out recently, it's something that we had in our mind from day one, but we needed to reach enough critical mass in order to launch it, is something we launched just 2 weeks ago, which we call sort of our benchmarking, our community aspect of Visor. Like, one of the things that anyone who invests in the private markets has experienced, it's so hard to get information about the people you invest with. It's always or almost always just word of mouth, right? So like if I want to invest in Blue Lake, I'm going to want to speak with, I'll probably, it'll be higher chance if I hear or see that other people have invested in Blue Lake and not people that Blue Lake has told me about, but people that I met, you know, at a conference, at an event, on a podcast, like that's where it happened. And so what we've done at Visor is we've sort of created this situation where, because we've already reached that critical mass, we now show our members where other people are investing anonymously, which what their asset allocation looks like overall, but also within each asset class, which platforms, funds, operators, GPs they're investing with, and how much money has been invested in each of them, and how many investments, just like, and we want to add more and more functionality so people can interact with each other based on that, and just share like anonymous but honest aspects of their investments experience, which brings a lot of transparency into this opaque industry, which is totally non-existent. So that's really cool.
That is very, very cool. And I know that that's a huge concern to a lot of investors. How do they know if they're picking the right operators, if they're partnered with the right sponsors? How do they do enough due diligence? And it's definitely part of the role that technology plays in really changing the landscape of private equity. So I think that it's great that you are on the forefront of it. And I imagine that it's going to only continue to develop out that way even more, you know, as we continue to become really more of a connected world. Now, I'm curious, too, what were some of the issues or challenges that you ran into that surprised you?
Well, things that surprised me, I don't know if this is a challenge or not, but many people at the beginning spoke about privacy being a big issue, security being a big issue. And that's sort of like the way we sort of started and hit the ground running with that. But then sort of when we started to do these beta calls and conversations with customers, and we'd hop on these Zoom conversations with them, and they'd share their screen, and they'd go into levels of private information that we're blown away by. It's like too much, right? Like I'd be on a Zoom call with like one of these beta users, and they'd share their screen and they'd open up their bank account, and then they'd open up their LastPass to log in. And I'd be like, wait, hold on. I don't want to see your information. I don't want to see your passwords. Stop. And that was sort of like mind blowing for us. And I have this feeling that the US is a little more keen to, I'd say, lowering the guard on privacy in order to achieve productivity, as opposed to the rest of the world. The rest of the world is like, they'll think twice before linking a bank account to an app. Whereas in the US, for good and for bad, they don't think about, like in the US, they don't think about it that much, right? If I can get value from that, I'll just connect it and I'll trust whoever I'm looking at. Maybe recently with the crash of all these banks and financial institutions, people are going to start to think about that twice, but that was really eye-opening for us to see that type of stuff. Some other like more complex stuff is that sort of like we've had, you know, gathering the information is hard because many operators, GPs don't email information. They email a login to sort of a portal, right? Which I understand. And that just creates more complexity in gathering the information. And another thing I've seen is that, so you can imagine I've invested in a bunch of different operators and I have different logins to different portals, and each operator uses a different technology for their portals, right? You know, there's Investnex and there's Agora and there's Juniper Square, and there's like endless numbers of pieces of software that the GPs use to communicate. And I have to log into each of them to see my investments. That's also one of the reasons we built Visor. But when we approach these platforms, all of them have are like, we do not want to help you create a more easy process to pull in information of the LPs that are invested with our GPs, because we just wanted to log into us. And that's sort of like a total conflict of interest in a sense, right? Because that'll never be the case. If I'm an LP, if I'm a good LP, I'll never put all my eggs in one basket. I'm going to diversify. And the chances that diversification is going to be with one platform is zero. There's no chance that's going to happen. And so that, I mean, it's good for me. That means people just can always need platforms like me to aggregate into one place and have that one source of truth. And that was also sort of, that's frustrating, not like the previous note, but anyway, we're always looking for ways to streamline the process and bring value.
Actually, everything that you just said was interesting to me. So I'll start off with kind of the first point about privacy concerns, particularly in the US. You know, it varies a lot person to person. Some people have much, much higher concerns about privacy, and others, you know, just really do not. It's an interesting observation that you made. I would have to say that we certainly value productivity and ease of access and service. And so, you know, if that simply means that we have to integrate our bank account into something very quickly, yeah, we are pretty likely in general, I would say, to do so. I think we're still cautious and want to believe that it's with a reputable, software or platform, but yeah, that's something interesting that you say. And then I guess the flip side of that is maybe we're more protective of our intellectual property, our IP property, right? And maybe that's where you've faced some resistance to having other platforms willing to integrate with Visor. So it is interesting. And I think it's fun that you're talking about some of the challenges, especially from a technology-based startup, that you have to face on the back end when you're trying to develop out the strategic partnerships and, you know, develop integrations. And it's definitely not always easy. So it's going to be fun to continue to watch your journey. Now, kind of switching over a little bit from Visor to just you, you know, as a passive investor, I really appreciate the sentiment that you have as far as your interest in diversifying and the reality that, you know, you're not going to be logged into just one portal, you know, probably most likely if you're really diversifying across sponsors. Just out of curiosity, given everything that we have seen happen in the market lately, how are you feeling as an investor given the current economy? What are your thoughts on that?
So it's complicated, right? At the one hand, sort of more diligent and cautious. And off the other hand, sort of there will be a lot of opportunities because of that sentiment. And there will be really good operators that will have access to those opportunities. And at the end of the day, when you invest with these operators like you guys, it's a long-term game, right? 5 to 7 years, usually, at least in the multifamily type stuff, some industrial as well. And so like when you look at how the world works, like it's a long-term game. Things go up. If you find good deals, they work. I think it's just really hard to find good deals as we move forward. One of the things that obviously has happened in the past 10 years is that there have been a lot of operators or GPs that have been super successful. Some of them probably won't in the next few years because they were used to really good markets, easy markets, easier markets. And so I'm just a lot more diligent. And the second aspect is like, it needs to make sense from a financial standpoint. When you have the ability to make zero risk returns this is like, I don't know if it's the right climate to talk about, like, you know, deposits and banks at this point in terms of that zero risk return, because there is risk.
Yeah.
But like I can tell you, at least here in Israel, like we get 6.5% yield on a dollar deposit. 6.5%, wow. That's zero risk for us. And so any risk that you take with that cash needs to make sense, either from a tax perspective or from just a return standpoint. So
interesting. I can tell you in the US, we don't get that kind of yield.
I know.
We do not.
No, I know you don't. Yeah. I've heard the US like 5%, 5.2% is the max I've heard of. And that's really rare as well. But so to your point, I think there still are going to be great investments, great opportunities. It's just hard to find.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I will say we haven't even actually rolled out with the announcement yet, but we do have a new deal that we're going to be rolling out very soon. That's an incredible opportunity. And I've been saying that for several weeks and months. You know, that because of the challenges we're facing, we are also going to find some really great opportunities, but, you know, it's not going to be as easy as it has been, but there are still good deals out there. And I'm excited that we're going to be bringing one to our investors soon. So that's just a little teaser for our listeners right now. But Latan, I won't leave you listening to this you know, portion for too much longer here. Instead, we can move over to something a little bit more fun. So before we kind of wrap up the episode, which actually I think has been very helpful, I think it's great for investors to know that there's other tools out there to help them maximize their success in their investments, really do add another level of due diligence when they're researching sponsors. But for the fun stuff, we do have what we call the lightning round questions, which is five questions that I ask all of our guests. So are you ready?
I am.
All right, perfect. So when you're not, you know, suddenly coming up with startup companies, what do you actually do for fun? What's a hobby?
So I have, I'm married, I have three little kids, and I love hanging out with my kids and traveling with them. Other than that, sort of from more an activity standpoint, you know, sailing and snowboarding are my main sort of hobbies, I'd say, when I get a chance to do them, when I'm not building a startup or with my kids.
Very cool. I can always respect that. Now, what about a fun fact? What is something that most people don't know about you?
When I was a kid, I played the saxophone for 5 years.
Nice. Do you ever try to do it anymore?
I didn't know. No. I don't even know where it is. I need to find it.
Right. Or if you have that kind of lung capacity as we get older, right?
Exactly. COVID probably. I got COVID 3 times. That probably didn't
help. Oh, no. Yeah, no. Better to just kind of leave it in the yesteryears, right? What about books? What book do you highly recommend investors need to read? Or is there something you're currently reading that you're excited to share about?
So I tend to read a lot of books about business, specifically in my world. But one of the books I feel like is a key that anyone in any aspect of their life always needs to sort of expose themselves to. Is around negotiation skills, because it's something we face all the time with our spouse, kids, businesses, vendors. Like, everyone is negotiating at the end of the day. And that book is called Never Split the Difference by Chris Voss. It's just an amazing book that I listened to on Audible twice, like right after the first time. And it was really, really good. It's really important.
Yeah, excellent book. I've also read it and I definitely recommend it also. Great. All right. Now, one of the things that we talk about at Blue Lake is, you know, the goal isn't just make money. Obviously, that's everybody's goal, but that's not the point of it, right? Our goal is to really live an extraordinary life. And so what would be your advice to people that are really focused on building extraordinary lives?
That is such an important point, because I'm in all these communities and groups of like high net worth individuals and stuff. And you get into this sort of rat race that is not no longer around sort of your career, but it's around money, right? You reach $1 million and you want to reach 10, and then you want to reach 100, and then you want to reach a billion. And then people forget the objective is not to generate more zeros. It's to generate more time.
Exactly.
And that's sort of like something that is so important for me. Like, it's really important for me. I want to be at home every night. If unless there's like a crisis, and be home with my kids before they go to sleep. I'll work afterwards, but I want to be with them, because I'm going to miss those periods when they're old and they won't want to be with me. and you know, traveling with them, like, it's just like, I feel like for me, it's experiences, especially with people that I care about. That for me is above all. And it might sound sort of like trivial, right? But that for me is sort of the objective. So to have that freedom to do whatever I want to do with the people I care about.
That's great advice, to keep that as a priority. Absolutely. I couldn't agree more, for sure. You can be very rich and lonely and miserable. So excellent advice.
I mean, there's this whole FIRE movement in the world, financial independence, retire early, that movement. And I hear so many people sort of saying, we cut restaurants, cut traveling, and we don't do much, and we reach FIRE. And I'm like, what the hell is that? I mean, that's worthless. Like, why would you want to live that way? So it's like, that's not the objective. Is not sort of it's to be able to do the things you like to do, that you enjoy, that create those experiences, and find a way to reach that goal. But that's the goal. The goal isn't money. The goal is reaching that.
Absolutely. It's to actually enhance your life. Couldn't agree more. Now, last but not least, and this will be a reward for those listeners that have hung in to the end with us, I know that you have a little freebie gift to share, or at least a discounted gift to share with our listeners today. So if our listeners want to get in touch with you, and if they want to take advantage of this special discount that you're giving out, How can they do that?
Yeah, so first of all, I always love speaking with other LPs or other people that are interested in passive investing in real estate. You can reach out to me. Our website is Vyzer, VYZER.co. And I'm Litan at Vyzer.co, or Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, whatever you guys want. I'm totally available there. And the discount, so what we've decided to give the Ready to Scale listeners here is, if you head over to Vyzer, VYZER.co/ready to scale, you'll automatically get a discount of 15% when you sign up to Vyzer. We're happy to give that to the listeners of Ready to Scale and the Blue Lake investors as well. And also, if there are any questions or anyone wants to reach out, totally available and open for it.
And we thank you for that, Litan, very much. And as a reminder for those of you listening and not necessarily watching on our YouTube channel today, that is Ready, the number 2, Scale, S-C-A-L-E. All right. Well, thank you so much, Litan. We appreciate your time. And for those of you that tuned in today, thank you so much for tuning in. We appreciate you. We'd like to know your thoughts. So make sure that you like, rate, and review the show. And in the meantime, be bold, be extraordinary, and keep moving forward.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.